Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Oh, good evening, John, by the way.
Just in case you forget,
yes. Even though you're sitting across the table from me.
Yeah, good evening, Ben. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Indeed, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number is 087-179-1032. That's also the WhatsApp number. It's 087-179-1032, and you can catch us also live on the World Wide Web at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast. And as we had, we had two emails last week inquiring about the podcast, and glad to say they're back up and running as of from last week. But if you want to go back and catch some of April's programs, they are available on the astronomy.ie website. Now, John, to start off with, as usual, what to see in the night sky, such as it is, the night sky, as we head towards the solstice in about 6 weeks' time, 7 weeks.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Doesn't feel like it. Gee, there we go. Many days till Christmas. 235.
Let's get to the solstice first.
Yeah. Now, space station, unfortunately, not back in our evening skies till May the 12th, which is not that far away. The guts of 2 weeks, but it is in our skies tomorrow morning.
In the morning skies. If you're up at 4:15 tomorrow morning, there's a nice pass, but 4:16, that's Dublin, but it won't be too different anywhere else in the country, wherever you are, but 4:16 is a.m. not a time when most of us will be up. There will be some up, of course, but if it's clear skies and you look up 4:15 tomorrow morning, you see that bright object heading west-east.
That's still a fine
International Space Station.
Even after all these years, still a fine sight. Mercury, which you saw only 2 weeks or so ago. Three weeks ago. Out of sight at the moment, in conjunction with the Sun. Venus, it's the one to watch for just at the moment, -4.2, and it's easternmost in Taurus. It's the brilliant evening star, the brightest, the one that appears first, and it shines in the west during and after dusk. And it's not going to set until 2 hours after complete dark, so you get a good chance to see that. So, in a telescope, Venus is a dazzling little gibbous globe. Now, it's disappearing fast. Funny enough, it's at 66% sunlit at the moment, and by the end of May, it's only going to be 50% lit, and it'll be a little bit bigger, but it's got a dramatically waning crescent. And about 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was 80-something percent lit. So it's getting out of our, out of the reflection from the Earth.
Well, it's less of it is sunlit, but because it's nearer, it's bigger, if you catch my drift.
Yep, to do now.
Or it appears bigger. Yep. Ted. Far away.
By the way, forget the face on Mars. I think you mentioned this as well.
Last week, yes.
There's a monkey on Venus.
I did say you need a bit of an imagination now to make a monkey's face out of it. But
no, I haven't seen this yet. And seemingly 85,000 volcanoes have been newly mapped on Venus at the moment. It had to happen. Wave hi to the monkey and beyond the twilight. There you go. So Mars, unfortunately, is crossing Gemini this week. So things are moving quite quickly up there, and I've been watching this. As I say, I might be up at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, raiding the fridge, so I'll stick my nose outside and see what's going on. I did get to see the space station at 3:15 last week. Still there. So Mars is only 2 to 2.5 fists at arm's length, so just remember that. And it's much closer below to the lower right of Pollux. So you can see them. Castor and Pollux are those two bright ones, unlike Not unlike, I suppose, the Orion's belt with the one in the missing in the middle. Yep, that's the way they form in the sky. So Mars, unfortunately, has faded to a magnitude of plus 1.3, and it's not brilliant anymore, really. And Jupiter's lost in conjunction with the Sun. Saturn, again, is low in the east-south as before, during early dawn. So it's creeping back into our morning skies. And faint Uranus and Neptune are out of sight at the moment, very low in the evening and morning twilight, respectively, because it's just too bright at each end. So you won't see it. So Venus really is the one to watch for at the moment. If you want to go Mars hunting, you will find it not too far away.
Thank you, John. Near to home, of course, we have the moon. It is up at the moment as we head towards full moon. The full moon this month in many cultures is called the flower moon because of the time of the year it is. The full moon in May, that's when a lot of flowers come out. So the full moon will be on Friday the 5th at 6:30 in the evening, to be precise. But it is up at the moment, not quite full. 91% of waxing gibbous moon we have at the moment. It will be due south of us at about 11:15. It'll be slightly bigger then, only 92%. You wouldn't really notice the difference between now and then. And when it sets tomorrow, it'll be a little larger again when it sets tomorrow morning at 5:12. And will rise again at 6:23 tomorrow evening. And of course, the sun will rise tomorrow morning at 5:47 a.m., which is 15 minutes earlier than a week ago, a local noon in Dublin when the sun crosses the meridian or is due south. That'll be at 1:21 p.m., which is 1 minute earlier than it was a week ago. And then the sun sets, would you believe it, 9:03. Yes, that's 8:57 p.m., 13 minutes later than a week ago. And from then until about 9:40, we'll have civil twilight. And from that time until 10:30, we'll have nautical twilight and nautical. And after that, until just before midnight, in fact, 12 minutes before midnight, we'll have astronomical twilight. That's when that ends, 11:48 p.m. tomorrow evening, which is almost a half an hour later than a week ago. Mm-hmm. And then after that, when we have astronomical night.
Yeah.
And in a few weeks' time, we won't have any astronomical night until the end of, from about mid-May, isn't it, to about the end of July.
Yep, there we go.
But anyway, more of that anon.
Now, SpaceX had to abort the launch last week, but they did get away on Sunday, April the 30th, which was 2 days ago, sending 3 satellites to distant geostationary orbit, and the Falcon Heavy lifted off from Kennedy Space Center in Florida at just coming up to 12:30 GMT, that's our time, tomorrow, yesterday morning. So it was carrying the 3 satellites aloft after days of delay due to the weather and, as I mentioned, the last-minute abort on April the 28th. And they had not stated the reason for that, but there could be anything. It could be just any sort of fear factor whatsoever with the leak here and there. So it's a long but a successful one. So all the 3 satellites were deployed over a 13-minute stretch beginning just about 4.5 hours after liftoff, which SpaceX confirmed via Twitter on yesterday morning to us. So lovely pictures as usual for takeoffs. And there we go, and that's that one. So they're popping a couple of satellites into geostationary orbit, just to...
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett, and our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Now, a few weeks ago, there was a mission launched called JUICE, and it is on its way to have a look at the larger moons of Jupiter. And the launch was successful. I think you were watching that too, John, were you? I think I'm sure. All went well. Actually, they are having a bit of trouble. Most things are working out okay, but they are in the middle of commissioning it. But an issue has arisen with the 16-meter-long Radar for Icy Moons Exploration, or what they call RIME. It's a big antenna, and there's something preventing it from being released from its mounting bracket. and the people on the ground here have a few ideas about what to do and how to solve the problem. And every day the antenna shows more signs of movement because they can see it from some of the images from one of the cameras on board the spacecraft, which has a partial view of the radar and its mount. The antenna is partially extended but still stowed away. That's roughly at one-third of its full length. Now, the current hypothesis is that there's a little tiny pin stuck and has not yet made way for the antenna's release. And it's thought that if it could just jiggle it a few millimetres, it would make a difference and set the rest of the radar free. Now, of course, it's so far away, you can't send anybody up. There's nobody there to do it. So they have a few ideas. So one of the options they're thinking of to nudge it and shake it is to fire the engines for a few moments and give it a bit of a rattle, and then next step is to fully deploy the antenna, as I say, yeah, include an engine burn, followed by a series of rotations that will turn juice, warming up the mount and the radar, which are currently in the cold shadows, and that might loosen it. Otherwise, to say everything is performing excellently well after the successful deployment and operation of the critical solar panels, of course, and the medium gain antenna, as well as another big 10.5 meter magnetic magnetometer boom. But still 2 months to go as part of the commissioning, and they seem to be very optimistic that they will actually free this antenna and everything will be fine. This particular instrument is an ice-penetrating radar designed to study the surface and subsurface structure of Jupiter's icy moons down to a depth of 9 kilometres, which is absolutely amazing. And it's only one of 10 instruments on board Jupiter's Icy Moons Explorer, which will have a look at some of the, as I say, the larger moons of Jupiter.
Now, we did speak about the lunar eclipse coming on May the 5th. Unfortunately, not viewable from this part of the world. So you've got to live in Antarctica. Nice place to be, quite cool though. That's the only thing. You need to be in Asia, Russia, Oceania.
Oceania, I think it's pronounced.
Yeah, no, funny. It was like, I remember somebody pronouncing Shania Twain, which is Shania Twain going back, so I was just using the IA and the N.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, there you go. And was it Eastern and Central Australia? Is that the printer's done funny things to my sheet in front of me here? So, unfortunately, you need to be somewhere else on the planet except Ireland.
Yes, I think it's even down there, is it a total, or I think it's a very deep umbral or penumbral eclipse, but
yeah, it's only, it's going to darken, but not completely disappears. It slips into the Earth's outer shadow. Just this coming Friday, creating what's known as a penumbral lunar eclipse.
That's the one.
10 marks to you. So there we go. So, yep, that's it as well. SpaceX debris lights up the sky. This is a thing that's come up in the last few weeks because of the bigger, larger rockets. They're not taking into consideration the span and spread of all the debris that comes down from the rockets. It's beginning to become an issue now at this stage.
I see with Elon Musk's, we covered this at the launch, and it went well up to a point. This is the largest rocket ever built and the most powerful rocket ever built. But they, something went quite wrong, and I think it was the ground controllers who pressed the self-destruct button. But it was a lot of material came down, and some of it on land, and I believe I just caught a glimpse of something earlier today where there are some people and organizations thinking of suing.
Wouldn't you love to find a bit of, you'd keep that, you'd sell it back to them. Be great. So anyway, the 36 reports of the fireball was in Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and in Texas. And several of the space junk reports included images and video, which I can see here as well, including one spotted at Denver International Airport, which is not a great place to have that, but it is becoming like space junk. Only this stuff, a lot of this might get down to the surface here, certainly as it takes off and doesn't get out into orbit, the bits and pieces fall back. So they can spread up to 2,000 kilometres in a big, wide, sort of an archy spread type thing. And you do not want to be hit by any of that, even though it might be just plastic or something like that. So we don't.
Just as an aside, Denver International Airport has a huge footprint. It's amazing. Yeah. I was there a couple of times, but it seemed like you landed about 10 miles away from the terminal building.
I know. It takes huge. It takes you a few tons of fuel to do a bit of taxiing for 20 minutes or so. So there we go. Now, last week we sort of got into the subject of the Japanese lander.
I haven't heard anything since.
No.
I was looking, but couldn't find anything.
No, me neither. And I imagine I wasn't looking too hard because it suddenly jumps out at you if something has been released into the media, I suppose, and they reckon it was a hard landing. The little bit, the cartoon bit, the animated bit, was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Oh, yeah, that was the animation. Yeah. This is what we, we had a camera outside, you would see, and it did. And of course, the animation, everything went perfectly well, but they couldn't contact the lander after it landed. And so they don't know. I haven't heard anything. That's certainly not looking good. And it's the first privately funded mission, if I'm not mistaken, to the moon up to now. Of course, everything has been done sponsored, state-sponsored bodies.
Which was a real shame because we were watching it. I got my usual text from you 3 minutes to go. So we switched over, followed the animated video, watched it land beautifully. And then the shock on people's faces. In the sort of area where they're all joined together and watching and fingers crossed and all that stuff as well. There's a huge amount of stuff on this particular one as well. It carried several lunar rovers, including a round baseball-sized robot. A baseball-sized robot. Usually we're talking about buses and cars and fridges and things like that. Developed by a Japan Space Agency and toy manufacturer Tomy. And it also had the 10-kilogram chair-sized... Oh, there's another one. The Rashid rover, developed by the United Arab Emirates in the experimental imaging system. And they have 200 employees, seemingly, in this particular thing. So it's going to be interesting now as they get further and further. So hopefully the money will come from somewhere as they get back to the moon and do what they need to be doing. Like the baseball bat, the baseball-sized robot.
Thank you, John. Now, before we get to what space smells like. What about the search for ET? The search for ET goes on the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I think most of us would be familiar with the SETI program, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. But I see now there is a part of that search is going to be piggybacked onto another survey of the night sky. And apparently one of the world's most powerful radio telescopes is going to join the hunt. The National Science Foundation's Very Large Array, or VLA, which is in New Mexico, is collecting data that scientists will analyze for the type of emissions that only artificial transmitters make, which of course would be a signal that of the existence of a technically accomplished society. And this VLA, they say, is the go-to instrument for radio astronomers, but it's the first time they're using it in a wide range and continuous search for technosignatures. Now, it's gathering a lot of data, a lot of wavelengths, but they're going to sort of hive off or siphon off a particular narrow band of signals in in the very narrow range of the electromagnetic spectrum. I think it's about 1 hertz, where they say that any signals from a deliberately constructive transmitter would contain such narrow band components. And that discovery would indicate that the signal is not produced by nature, but by an alien transmitter. So, and they've actually used Voyager 1 to calibrate, which Voyager 1 being the furthest or the most distant human-made object at 15 billion miles away, and just checking the signal from that now is very weak, but they have used that as part of the calibration of the instruments. So they're taking all this data in various wavelengths, and they're going to just, one set of a team of people are going to look at this very narrow band. But I reckon that if there's anything there, it would have to be from an artificial intelligence, that nothing in nature transmits at that wavelength. So ET could be phoning us any day soon. I wouldn't hold my breath now on that one.
You just never know. They could have sent a signal out many moons ago.
Indeed.
And it could take another many moons to get here. And then to send one back is the problem.
Yeah, it's a big array, you know. It has 27 antennas spread over 23 miles of desert real estate. And they're studying 80% of the sky. So we'll see.
Okay. I remember watching the Jodie Foster film years ago.
Contact.
And at the end, nothing. Just, sorry if you haven't watched it, I've spoiled it for you, but they just spent the whole film watching for listening for contact, and at the end it was just, like when it started, just nothing.
No. Yeah. We talked about the same film. Now, that's where she gets into that. They get a signal and they build a machine that they believe the signal is the instructions for. And she gets in and off she goes. And she meets her father, does she?
Something like that.
And there's a lot of things happen. But then when it stops and she gets out and says, well, nothing happened. You're still here and you were only in there 5 minutes. And
it's like a dream within a dream within a dream, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, was it a dream or was it... Or did she really go through some time-dimensional porthole? And
we've had a few movies or films, whatever you want to call them, like that. Interstellar was one of those ones as well. Sort of, don't know if you saw that. It's a big, long film.
I think I saw that.
Yeah.
Is that the one where the spaceships appeared over Earth in different locations weird creatures that look like octopuses or something?
Yeah, that was a really weird film, and it was all really happened inside a house.
Oh, no, I'm thinking
sort
of
thing as well. So anyway, Alan has been on. Good evening, Mr. Alan. And he's fully trying to decipher through the static in Kildare for some reason. Fuzzy wilderness, a wonderfulness of Ben and John as ever. Pesky, I honestly. There you go.
Thank you very much.
We never asked him actually what way he listens. Is it through the radio? Is it through the internet? So it's just... Give us a tinkle back just to let us, because we never really asked that question, because Kildare is sort of on the borderlands, I suppose, where we would sneak to. Now, what does space smell like? Now, we did this before a number of years back as well.
Ah, yes.
And though a pure, unadulterated whiff of outer space is impossible for humans, it's vacuum, of course, and we would die if we tried, which wouldn't be really good. When astronauts are outside the ISS, space-borne compounds adhere. They stick to the suits and hitch a ride back to the station. So that's how they know what space smells like. So they've documented having reported smelling burnt or fried steak after spacewalk. And that doesn't seem too bad. No, we can manage with that.
I like it. Medium rare.
I do as well. I don't mind. But anything with fried steak up in... Imagine the microwave up there now cooking steak in the ISS. That'd be great. So they say the smell of space is so distinct that 3 years ago, NASA reached out to Stephen Pierce of the fragrance maker Omega Ingredients to recreate the odor for its training simulations. So things have been done. And recently they did say that they did the smell of the moon. It doesn't say what it is. It's something resembling gunpowder, spent gunpowder, is what the moon smells like. But this is the way it works. So when they're in their near vacuum, it's almost a vacuum, it's probably atomic oxygen, among other things, and the clinging particles that have the acrid aroma over seared steak, hot metal, and welding fumes. And there's a mix. So what happens when they get back into the station? This stuff is all clung to the spacesuit, and they get this faint odours of steak, which, not, as I say, is not too bad at all. Yep.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. That's me. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Now, the Webb Telescope, doing its doing amazing work, and it has found water vapor on a rocky planet orbiting a red dwarf star. Well, actually, they're not sure, because whether the water vapor is from the planet or whether it's from the star itself. A red dwarf stars are probably the most common type of stars in the universe, and therefore they, most of them have, as far as we know, most of them have planets orbiting around them. And this particular planet, exoplanet, well, it's known as GJ486b, not a very memorable name, but it, this is rotating, it's orbiting its parent red dwarf star every 1.5 days, so it's very quickly, and it's very close in, and it's about 3 times the mass of the Earth. And the thing is, of course, is it in a habitable zone, that little Goldilocks zone where water vapor can, well, water, liquid water can exist? Or they think it might be coming from the star itself, which sounds very counterintuitive, would you call it, if the water vapor on a star. But apparently there's some water vapor has been detected on the sun when from some of the sunspots, which are much cooler and still hot, though. Boiling water, steam, yeah, what would be water vapor? And so they're having a look at that. And they said that would be kind of interesting, just that if a planet so close to a star would have an atmosphere. So that's what they're wondering, why it is, it the planet or is it the star? Either way, it's a little bit odd, but they're going to do more, of course, more research into more observation and studying and see which is what. But again, another great study or information and work from Webb. Of course, Webb will, like most of these things, will probably end up posing more questions than it answers.
Yeah, that's it, because it's sort of in an area that we don't understand just yet. Anyway, Alan's back. He says he could just about hear the mention in that poor reception that he has in County Kildare. Well, we don't mind. He's listening away as usual. Unfortunately, we can't get into the Voyager probes. We did want to mention Voyager 1, which you had a bit on, and Voyager 2, which I had a bit on.
And we'll dark matter, I said I'd cover. But
and I wanted to go into the largest black hole ever discovered, which fitted quite a lot of suns. So unfortunately, we have run out of time. And that's it for this week.
Thank you, John, for that. So hopefully, maybe, I get to the dark matter and other items next week. But that's all, as John says, the time we have this evening here on the Astronomy Show, where our email address is astronomy@dublincityofm.ie. And thanks to John for his new items and for driving the sound desk. And thanks to James Sweeney and to Conor Lennon for making the show also available on astronomy.ie. And of course, you can also get the program as a podcast. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next is Hello China, 9 o'clock. Bren Lynon with Threads, 11 o'clock. Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood. And then from midnight till 2 a.m., it's After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. Please join myself and John the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
And say goodnight, John.
Good night, John. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.